Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Don't go for second best, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. How about those derbies, eh? It's Monday, 16th of January. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Pete Donaldson.
And I'm Vidushan Hantaraja.
Oi, oi, everybody. It's the start of the working week. It's Monday. We're together again. Dust yourself off from the weekend and listen to us now. Jim Campbell, look at you smiling.
I'm just in a good mood.
Oh, it's top of the league, Jim Campbell, everybody. Pete's smiling and Fish is smiling.
Yeah, you smiling, Marcus?
Very much so. Oh, you having a go, are you?
Yes!
Weekend for most of us.
Take your fucking penalties, right? You might...
Okay. All right. You've laid the gauntlet down. And I'm going to have to pick it up again.
Do you want another go at that intro?
What would you rather? 3 points and those owners, or no, 3 points and not those owners?
God damn it.
Yeah, and they've got me. Pull.
You can't have it all, it would appear. Jim Campbell, let's start with you. Your highlight of the weekend.
Well, aside from the obvious, which I imagine we'll come on to.
We've got a whole section dedicated to your obvious highlight. Another highlight.
I'm going to go for when Amadou Onana scored for Everton. Mm. He looked down the camera and seemed to say, I'm him!
Right.
I'm him.
Yeah.
Said it a couple of times, and I don't really know what that... I do know what it means, but I don't know why he's saying it like that, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yes.
That is a thing. I'm him, as in, like, I'm that guy, basically.
Right, yeah. I figured it'd be something like that, but I'd not heard it before for I am 90 years old.
Yeah, and it ended happily ever after that day forever. Yeah. Peter, your highlight of the weekend.
It just has to be Mitrovic's penalty.
Robbed.
It was just robbed. He just loves Newcastle so much.
Yeah.
He just, you know, he refuses to celebrate, but he refuses to score.
Yeah, he was going to celebrate. He was
already celebrating.
We did see him celebrate. Yeah.
At first glance, it looked like the sort of deftest penalty I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and then
it was
you realise there's an accidental reason for that.
Well, it's funny though, because it sparked a chat about Mitrovic's penalties. He doesn't score that many. He's just a confident taker.
Right. So he goes, "Give me that," and he goes, "Oh, missed. Well, I'll do it again."
If you remember, you might not under Scott Parker when Fulham were up. There was this thing where Fulham just kept giving. Nobody could score a penalty.
Yeah.
Like, well,
you have a go.
So Mitrovic is basically like, "I'll do it." It's like, yeah, but the percentage is still not great.
His reaction when it was ruled out was not so much the, "Oh God, what a great chance to go ahead." It was more that, "Fuck, they're laughing at me."
Yeah,
I've embarrassed myself in front of them. I was going to give it so large.
Oh dear. Well, there we are. Vish, what about your highlight of the week?
My highlight of the week isn't quite a highlight, but it did show to me that even someone as big as Yerry Mina can be, you know, in certain situations, as meek as me in everyday life. And it was when he was, you know, it was quite unsavoury scenes at the end when Everton players were leaving Goodison Park and they were confronted by fans. Mm. Yerry Mina got out of his car to chat to them, really.
And he was a big guy as well.
Yeah, he is a big guy. Mm. And it was when one of the main person, main Everton fan, who was, I suppose, like doing most of the shouting, was like, "You know, you won't be here when we get relegated next year." And he was like, "I will be." Mm. He's like, "No, you won't." And he went, "I will. Yeah. I'll definitely
will."
He's
like, "Oh, you said you're going to get relegated. Ah, got you there, didn't I?"
It was just, I wouldn't say Yerry Mina's always the best at sensing danger, but he did it very well then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fair enough. My highlight of the weekend, it was the second Nottingham Forest goal. And I could be even more specific. It was Morgan Gibbs-White's involvement in that goal.
Yeah.
Right. Just spectacular stuff. It was a great goal and it lifted the roof off the City Ground. It was marvellous to see. But Gibbs-White, when he does that overhead kick and then he gets up and gets the ball again and then beautifully plays in Brennan Johnson. Superb swashbuckling stuff.
Not only plays in Brennan Johnson, but if you were told that, like, right, you're going to have two involvements in this move, what are you going to do? So, well, the first one's going to be an overhead kick, and then it'll be a three ball with the outside of my right foot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
Just superb. Absolutely superb. So there we are. There are our highlights of the weekend. No doubt you've got your own. Let's go to the North London Derby to start with. Tottenham Hotspur got a big fat zero, and Arsenal got two of those things we call goals. Jim Campbell, easy peasy.
Yeah, it's Sunday evenings like that, I wish I had a TV in my jacuzzi. and a jacuzzi. But it was so enjoyable to watch. Obviously really, really stressful to watch because it always is. But after that sort of settled down, I was really impressed by the different dimensions of Arsenal's play. And also, if you think back to that fixture last season, that was one of the hurdles which we just ran into rather than hurdled. And it was, I suppose, a mental test to not be overawed by the occasion. But their like attacking prowess in the first half was magnificent. And we know Spurs are better in the second half. And it was really interesting to me how Arteta seemed to have a plan for that and to just sort of accept that as reality. Mm-hmm. We know Spurs are going to come on you a lot more in the second half. Don't know why that seems to be so prevalent in their game plan, but they did a really good job of containing that as well. And what, you know, we've been crying out for a long, long time is control, and that seems to be the main feature of Arteta's game.
The amount of times I've heard you say "take back control," Jim, and it seems that Arsenal have. But the game was really won in that first half, and it's Arsenal's first away win at Tottenham in 9 years—a stat that might surprise you, Pete Donaldson.
No.
No, it's quite surprising though. When I saw that, I was like, "Well, surely not."
Yeah, I thought it would have been sooner than that.
Yeah, incredible. Paul Merson, of course, didn't hold back on that first half Tottenham Hotspur performance. And the first half was embarrassing at the highest level. I've never seen a derby game like that.
He's not wrong.
No. No, I wasn't.
But you've seen Spurs do this a lot this season, haven't they? They've had to pick things up in the second half because they keep doing that.
Yes.
But the way, like, generally, I think I messaged in the WhatsApp group quite early on. Maybe it was only 1-0 at the time, but it had the feel of like a mismatch of the 90s, where it was like Spurs didn't have access to the same shops that Arsenal go to, or like the same wares. It was generally quite surprising. I thought pre-match the Spurs might try and make it a bit more of a scrap. I suppose.
Thought that too,
because they've got the players, particularly through the middle and in midfield, through the middle of their team and in midfield, to do that. Players who can play that way and also stick to actual, do the footballing side.
Rough
as well.
Them up a bit.
Yeah, but while also without veering too much from their actually like on the ball game plan. And as I saw a tweet from a Spurs fan called NikkiTY61, and he put it perfectly in terms of like, it wasn't really a battle because you can't hit the other guy if you're 20 feet away from him.
Yeah. No, there was very little intensity from Tottenham.
Well, they seemed to pack the defence, didn't they? I mean, much was made on Match of the Day about that back five. I wonder if that Conte looked at what Newcastle did at the Emirates and thought, right, well, let's try and push them out wide. And Lloris has gone and done that. No, but I push them out wide and let's contain. And then they seem to have a better second half generally. So I don't know, but it was pretty piss poor. And, Spurs fans, rightly so, were very unhappy with that. But from an Arsenal point of view, Jim, phenomenal. And Odegaard, they were Arsenal at times were given so many chances to shoot from range. Yeah. Now, again, I wonder if, again, you go back to that Newcastle game. Now, Newcastle were very good at putting them out wide. It was a great defensive display, unlike this Spurs side yesterday. But I wonder if they just thought, well, if they get to hit it from range, it's not so bad. But actually, when you've got players like Odegaard in the side, it was a phenomenal strike.
He places his shots very, very well.
Yeah. Mm. And Partey, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Was that a shinner? I couldn't work it out.
No. The ball can't move like that if it's a shinner.
Yeah, but it at the same time, it looked like it hit his shin.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I think it hits the crux of the ankle, but I think it's mainly boot.
If that was a shinner, my goodness.
What a shin?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely sensational stuff. But people criticise that Spurs display, understandably. But Aaron Ramsdale was given man of the match.
Yeah.
So
made some brilliant saves.
Yeah, and I know that Arsenal were worthy winners, and as I say, the game is pretty much won.
Also, he is one of their players.
He is.
So,
but it shows you that he was called upon.
Yeah,
because if it's a game of complete control and dominance, then Ramsdale wouldn't have that much to do.
Yeah, I mean the Sessegnon save was particularly
very
good. I thought, and obviously there's the Harry Kane one late in the first half. Mm-hmm. But I think the pattern of the game. Arsenal were in control of it, and I think that's why people are saying it. It's just what people are saying.
Right. Well, we can't argue with what people are saying. We can argue with what people are doing, though, because somebody, some little chap gave Aaron Ramsdale a kick, didn't they?
He aimed a kick
at him, didn't he? I don't think he actually hit him, did he?
I think he got him on his little wing of pickers. He looked like a little Dickensian urchin, didn't he?
With like a desert scarf on.
Yeah, very enjoyable.
He had a lot of...
Very enjoyable.
Different.
Well, his look was very enjoyable.
Oh, his look, but
what
his actions were.
Yeah, exactly. Tiny Tim just swinging a boat at Aaron Ramsdale, who could have eaten him.
Yeah. It was enjoyable, to be honest.
Really?
They've completely lost it.
You must love Aaron Ramsdale's like attitude and demeanor, picking up where Ian Wright left off.
Completely, yeah, absolutely. It's all part of the fun. I also enjoyed Eddie Nketiah absolutely shit-housing a header over the line after Lloris's mistake. It's all those little moments make this sort of thing fun, don't they?
Did you enjoy, I think we all did, Vischer, Mikel Arteta in the celebrations and then suddenly seeing Granit Xhaka going over to the melee and going,
Wonderful. You from that 2-year ban you're about to get.
It was, I know it's obviously it was hilarious, but I think it's a really good example of how he knows everyone in his squad. Like he was very much like with Ramsdale, like oh come on, you've had a good game. And Ramsdale actually is quite a clear-headed guy. I think his post-match interview was quite good. He basically kind of gave credit to some of the Spurs players for the way they reacted to that incident, kind of sensing how absurd it was that someone from the crowd was trying to get on the pitch this, that and the other, and also appreciate the fact that Richarlison's having to go at Ramsdale because Ramsdale was rubbing it in. It's nice to have a grown-up in that situation talk about that kind of thing. And at the same time, Arteta sees Xhaka running towards the danger, all told, and thinks, right, he's not going to help himself here. I need to help him. And I think it's a really interesting thing. If you think back to May of last year when Arsenal basically lost fourth place because of that defeat at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, Conte, I covered that match for The Independent, and in his press conference afterwards, Conte was running rings around Arteta, ridiculing him, patting him on the head, talking about how he was too emotional, almost talking like, look, this is big boy stuff. You're not quite ready for this. And less than a year, Arteta did a number on him. If you think of the way Spurs set up there, even 2-on-3, it's a bad idea in that midfield. But it was almost like he completely forgot about how Zinchenko's been playing this season. And the fact that he is operating as that fourth midfielder. Who I thought had a brilliant game. I didn't realise he was so good in the air.
This leads me to think with Antonio Conte. I often say to him, Conte's a winner. You know, you think about when he was all those years ago when he was at Juventus. And I know he won the title at Chelsea, won a title at Inter. So he's had a very impressive managerial career. But are we seeing him slightly floundering now? It happens. You know, players at the top level, sometimes people might say, an average, very, very good player will have maybe 10 years at the top level, something like that. The same could be said for managers.
Absolutely.
It's a difficult job for Conte. I understand he's come in and there are better teams above them in the league. But I just wonder.
He needs the thrill of a title race, doesn't he? He needs the motivation of that.
Possibly.
And he's not getting that here
for
whatever reason.
But he got it all wrong.
But it seems to me like he's not as invested in Spurs as he should be, to the point where he doesn't feel like... It doesn't feel like he's the leader of a team. No. It feels like he's a man doing a job oversees a group of people who themselves are supposed to be a team.
There's
a detachment from him, and it feels a bit... They deserve better, to be honest.
Well, it feels very, very different with Arsenal and Arteta. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable what's going on there, of course. And Arsenal are now 8 points clear at the top of the league. Again, I ask you, Jim, I asked you this early in the season, but how will you be celebrating the title?
I mean, I'm still trying to be as cautious as possible because it's Man United on Sunday, still got Man City to play twice. Injuries will hit Arsenal really hard, so they've got to be clever in the transfer market. As I've mentioned, I have privately thought about that once or twice.
Which Pitbull track have you gone for?
I don't know. I'll just put it on shuffle because they're all bangers, aren't they?
True enough. That's the right answer. But yes, Manchester United next. Obviously, that's a crucial one.
Huge game.
It's a massive game, you have to say. The only negative for Arsenal, of course, on Sunday was Chelsea announcing their signing of Mikhailo Mudryk, who had been tipped for a move to Arsenal, of course, for a while. Chelsea added Mudryk's Instagram handle to their own bio before the signing had even been completed, rubbing salt into those wounds. Yeah, he'd been liking posts linking him to Arsenal for months, but in the end, Arsenal refused to match Chelsea's offer of £88 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, the situation in Shakhtar has been very, very desperate, of course, because of the ongoing war there, and I know that's a lot of players left and they didn't get fees for them and so on. So that's why they were saying, look, we have to hold out for as much as we can for this guy. So very understandable from their point of view. I mean, to be honest with you, it'd be understandable at any time in their history because, Chelsea have got tons of cash and so on. But from a Chelsea point of view, that's an awful lot of money.
It's a huge amount of money, isn't it? And is it 400 million? Around that they'd spent before that in transfers, it's a huge outlay, and obviously there's that 8-year contract, so the amortization is spread out, and it makes it more feasible for FFP. But potentially with contracts that long, there are maybe issues down the line if players don't work out and they become harder to shift. It's who knows.
It's very unlikely, though, isn't it? When have Chelsea spunked a lot of money on a player and it not worked out?
Romelu Lukaku. I see what you're doing here. Yeah, he did score a winning goal in the Champions League final, baby.
He did. That's the thing. A thing about this, I think it reflects well on the fact that Arsenal aren't willing to, spend beyond their means to a point. I know that's not necessarily an Arsenal problem, but in terms of, you don't need to be held at ransom with that kind of stuff. Obviously, they do need to bring in bodies in January. There's no question about that. And the other thing is, there's, the contract's an interesting one because if he's as good as people who know him expect him to be, Roberto De Zerbi, who managed him at Shakhtar, said this guy's a future Ballon d'Or winner. If he plays well next year, or rather in a year's time, he will get a new contract. That's how these things work. But also there's no guarantee of any kind of immediate success with Chelsea because of the way Chelsea are at the moment. So I don't know. It's not as a bigger blow to Arsenal as you know, the internet account would make it seem.
Yeah, but I think I really like Arteta's comments about how Arsenal need to be disciplined in the transfer market, because the building of the squad as he wants it is quite a delicate thing. Mm-hmm. And there's only going to be so much money to go around, and he's going to, you know, they need to say no when they can, because I mean, bigger picture, aside from this season, he's trying to build a squad that can regularly feature in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's expensive, but it means you can't get many misfires, you know, and you can probably get more than one player for that amount of money. And especially someone coming into a position where they're likely not going to be first choice. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, inexperienced. It's a little bit of a gamble, because I mean, he looks fantastic, but there's only a very small sample size to go on. So I think, yeah, it's it's the right thing for Arsenal to do. And I think actually this could be a bit of a disaster for the market, this transfer, because it sets a pretty bad precedent,
yeah,
in terms of these huge fees.
Yeah, I think unless he goes on to win the Ballon d'Or, I don't think this is bad for Arsenal, because because it's such a huge fee. Cover for Joao Felix though while he's out. Gentlemen, is there not one but two Manchester clubs in the title race now? Manchester United beat Manchester City 2-1, and there's talk of the title fish. There is.
It wasn't. Don't do this.
It was leaning on his microphone.
It wasn't that long ago.
Don't do this.
Brentford won 4-0 when Manchester United came to town. Wasn't that?
I missed those.
I was with him. You should have seen his little face.
Wasn't
each goal went in.
Long ago when Manchester City beat Manchester United in this very fixture 6-3, and now look at yous, right up there, just 1 point behind Manchester City.
2-1 at the Swamp.
Yeah. They are a little bit off Arsenal, of course, Manchester United. I mean, it shows you how good Manchester United's season are, is they're keeping pace with Newcastle United. That shows you how good it is.
Sorry, good point.
But it was controversial, of course, Pete Donaldson, because Bruno Fernandes' first goal should never have stood in a million years.
Nah, it's fine, isn't it? It's fine, isn't it?
Pete, go on then, what's your take?
I think the rule... The word in the rule or the law or whatever you kids call it these days, uh-huh, I think is the significant is he's offside if he does something that clearly impacts on the ability of the opponent to play the ball. Why do you need the word clearly in there? Because that's the thing that they can go, ooh. I mean, that's the kind of thing you go, well, see, the clear is not. Mm. It's that's the thing that's derailing the train for me. So I guess, yeah, I mean, was it clear? Was it not? I mean, he's on the ball, so nobody can inhabit that three-dimensional space that he is inhabiting. Yeah. So he's shielding the ball somehow. I just, you know, it was just a piece of shit, wasn't it?
It was. It really was. And on match day two, they highlighted
it. But it's nothing to do with the referees. The referees did it. The referees applied the rules correctly, the laws of the game correctly.
Yeah.
But the law is an ass.
It is, yeah. I thought they highlighted really well on match of the day too, because they at one point, they... faded out Rashford from the picture, so you could see what they were looking at. Like, so if he's not interfering with play, then the goalkeeper should be looking at Bruno Fernandes and all the rest of it. It was clearly that he's interfering with play. I mean, I just wonder with that rule. I honestly, like, years and years ago, we remember if someone's offside, they're offside.
Yeah.
That's it, end of. And it was frustrating because if they were the other side of the pitch, you were like, oh, but they're not, yeah, they're not interfering with play. But he's offside. Yeah. So everybody understood that.
Yeah.
Again, whether it's a toenail or daylight or shoulder, whatever, that's we're actually not arguing about that. So that was the rule. And everyone was, you know, au fait with that, whether you liked it or not. You knew where you stood, pun intended. So you then change it to, well, that's a bit rubbish because there was a great goal scored and the guy on the other side of the field, you know. So let's do interfering with play. And it's painfully obvious. But the problem is with these rules and VAR highlighting it, not that it was VAR this time, of course. I honestly think you should have in there, if he's interfering with if he's interfering with play, it's the referee's discretion.
Mm. Yeah.
I honestly think that is as neat and tidy as you're going to get this. This is not has the ball crossed the line. This rule is tying us all up in knots.
Dehumanize a very human experience.
Exactly.
But I would just say at the end of every
spirit of that law,
every law should just come. The last line should be, but let's not be silly. Like, it's just, and that would just be everything. Yeah. And they got, well, they were being silly there, I think. So,
well, that's it.
VAR decision. Well, silly.
A mate of mine went to see Aussie Rules once many years ago, and he was trying to get what are these rules about? Mm. He didn't know. And he said to this chap who was next to him, who was trying to explain it, and he said, so how many steps can you take with the ball? Now, I'm sure there's probably a very simple answer for this, but it was the guy went, well, you can, you can take a cut. And he said, but he took like four, and he did, and he's and he's like, yeah. Well, you just don't take the piss. You know? And I think, yeah, that is the spirit of this stuff, isn't it?
I mean, what's been lost is it's really, really clever play from Rashi, isn't it? He's in brilliant form.
Yeah. It's not, though.
You know what I think?
No. I think
they got lucky, didn't they?
I think they made
it. He's trying to hit the ball. He's trying to kick it.
Well, no.
It was well played from Fernandes.
From Fernandes at the last moment. I think people were giving Rashford and Fernandes a bit too much credit there. They're like, it was really smart that he was, you know, running alongside the ball and not touching it. I was like, no, he had every intention to play it. He just thought that, you know, he would have played it right to the very end had Bruno not given him that shout. Jonathan Wilson wrote, Rashford essentially played the most protracted dummy in history. Yeah. He was basically dribbling with the ball.
Yeah. That's right. But then, of course, he got the winner.
He did.
Yeah. He got the winning goal.
It was a great turnaround, wasn't it? I mean, aside from the boring kind of offside chat, it was a really, really strong performance from Man United.
It must have been enjoyable, Vish.
Yeah, well, it was the most controlled we've been over Manchester City since I can remember, really.
Well, since probably Ferguson days, you'd argue, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I think there was also a sense that, you know, the run that Manchester United are on, you could, you know, there were arguments put to them that the teams that were playing weren't necessarily in good form. But I think I found watching them that we had a degree more control. There was a lot more purpose in the way United were playing. Mm. And things like that. And that kind of came to the fore then.
Especially going at 1-0 down. I mean, I don't think many people would have had first goal scored by Jack Grealish with his head.
But I think it was the first time in 18 months that City haven't won a game that they've led.
Yeah. And
they've taken the lead.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, absolutely incredible. Yeah. When they get the breakthrough, you think, oh, okay, here we go. But the fact is, Manchester United nullified Haaland. They didn't concede that many chances. Okay, they get a huge slice, not just a slice, a whole cake of luck with that equaliser. But then what do you do with that? And they go on the front foot. And on comes Garnacho, who loves it, doesn't he? What an impact sub. He's been so many times.
He's wonderful, yeah.
You know, it gets the ball. And again, even in the goal, you know, he goes to cross it and the ball bounces back to him. You get the rub of the green. What do? You make use of it. And there's Rashford to tap in. You know, an amazing turnaround. And it shows you the confidence and the plan that Ten Hag has instilled in this
side. Absolutely. I mean, we've been talking for, well, years, really, about how Man United's midfield is what lets them down, and it's the obvious kind of weak point in their game. And Casemiro and Eriksen in particular.
Casemiro's been a big sign.
It's been huge and had a really immediate impact. And obviously, Eriksen has been quietly brilliant and just pulls strings all over the place. Like, it's so much improved, and it gives them so much of a sort of a much more solid foundation, and as Bruno Fernandes has been saying this week, you can see that they're playing as a team. They've got a plan. They understand each other. They're playing for each other. But it's a
proper team that works hard. A proper team. Were his words.
Yeah, indeed. But
which is, you know, it shows you what was going on before.
Yeah, like Specs couldn't get that going for whatever reason. But like, like Aaron Wan-Bissaka's greatly improved. Luke Shaw is apparently a brilliant centre-half now. Like Fernandes has really
brilliant.
Been consistent.
Maguire came on and made sure they got over the line.
Absolutely. And also, Marcus Rashford looks like the main man now, and it suits him. They are so much more of a coherent team. Are they back? Are Man United back?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was all about his back, wasn't it? His shoulders. Yeah. Like kind of,
I should say that he became the first Man United player to score in 9 consecutive home games since 1959. Yeah. But I mean, all this talk, we're getting sort of very excited on Manchester United's behalf. But Erik ten Hag said of any kind of title talk, he said, the fans may dream, but we are not.
I think it can't
get any better than this. It just can't.
No dreaming.
I think the title talk is nonsense.
It's called the Theatre Dreams, mate.
You can have just water down your
yes,
dreams.
There's some rats, but it's still called the Theatre of Dreams.
Eat less cheese before bed. You don't need to be thinking that, dreaming that wildly.
On
Rashford, though, Pete mentioned it there. There was a period maybe about 12 months ago where I was actually quite sad watching Rashford because it felt like we had wasted his best years in terms of feels like his you know, there was, it felt like a case of arrested development in terms of he was not really improving. Feels like he became one dimensional because of the lack of coaching, I suppose.
Yeah.
But
the body language as well, everything. You thought, is his confidence shot? Is he going to go on loan? Is this the kind of the beginning of a bit of a dip?
But he had an important operation after the Euros. He then seemed to rediscover his pace as well. He looks a lot more robust. And because of that, you get a situation like that happened on the weekend where he has this hip issue that takes him to the floor. He just about makes it to half time and he comes out and plays the rest of the game.
Well, I thought he was done.
So did I,
But there you go, gets the winning goal.
Martial is one that's hooked and incredible game for him.
Just a quick word on Manchester City, Peter. Erling Haaland is yet to score in 2023. Is he a blonde fraud?
Big blonde fraud, yeah. I just think that De Bruyne is just not finding him anymore. I don't know whether they've had a falling out or something, but just second half, he just sort of was drifting very deep to try and pick up the ball.
Well, I'm not going to pass to you.
I'm not going to pass to you, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. But you sort of think that, like, City could do with just thinking about maybe relinquishing 10% of that possession and just trying to sort of risk losing the ball in attack sometimes, you know what I mean? They're so focused on possession. It might be nice to sort of just give Haaland a couple of 50-50 balls to squabble over with the defender, because otherwise because he probably win them, and probably slot home.
That's an interesting point, because I don't like some of the bollocks talk on the weekend is like, are City better without Haaland? It's like, well, we know exactly what they're like without Haaland. You know, they've won league titles without Haaland.
But the reason he wasn't here, that's time going forward.
But the reason they signed him is because what he did at the start of the season, and what we know he can do. So he's going through a bit of a bad patch at the moment, despite the fact that he has scored 4 goals in his last 6 games and since the World Cup.
And he's a little bit injured, isn't he? He's got a foot injury, and that's important to a footballer, having a working foot. But Man City sort of defend so high up the field, it just squishes the play a little bit, and it means that like Haaland just can't get behind, and it's just pull back a bit.
Hit him on
calm
the break.
It down and play a bit more of a counter-attacking game, which plays into his strengths, I think.
They say football fans are fickle. Haaland just goes like, oh, see? They're better off without him. It's like, look, how did you see the first?
If you look at the league table, though, like Spurs have got, I mean, Spurs in fifth, who are having a fucking nightmare season, they've got the same like form as Man City and they're playing each other next. That's going to be an interesting little battle.
Very interesting. Well, all this talk about Pep Guardiola, you can find more of that on Wednesday, because you can listen to the Football Ramble's guide to Pep Guardiola. It's the first of a special two-parter on Pep and Jose Mourinho with myself, Vish and Andy. I humbly say to you, it's a great listen. So keep an eye out for that in your podcast app, and I think you're going to have a lovely old time. There we are, everybody. Right, let's have a quick break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Average performance, average cup tie, in that we allowed them to win 4-0.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Oh, poor old Frank. Right, Premier League. More Premier League. Give it to me, baby. Brighton 3, Liverpool 0. Hellfire. Only Manchester City, Arsenal and Spurs have scored more Premier League goals than Brighton this season. They're not missing Graham Potter, Jim.
No, they're not. It's I love that for Welbs as well. Absolutely brilliant finish from him.
What a goal.
Was that, for a Manchester United fan, was that almost as satisfying as the Manchester derby win?
I'll be honest.
I was really pleased for him as well because he's done the rounds, hasn't he, Wells?
True.
Yeah, I'll be honest. It's the first time in a while I've watched Match of the Day from start to finish. what a goal. Gazzaresque, would you say?
I would go that far. I mean, it was a damning goal and showed you what Liverpool are up to this season so far. But Brighton, let's start with them because they were brilliant. I know people say, were Liverpool bad because Brighton brilliant? No, Liverpool were just bad. But Brighton can also be brilliant at the same time, you know. And they were. And they've had a great
season.
They
set the agenda, didn't they?
Completely. They were superb. And they're having a lovely old time. I mean, there they are in seventh. They've got a couple of games in hand on Fulham. They've got one game. If they win their game in hand, they'll go joint fifth with Spurs on 33 points. In fact, they would go above them on goal difference. It's a fantastic season they're having. And Solly March, I mean, Vish, you were tipping him for England ahead of the World Cup, and everybody laughed at you. Well, you have to say, they're not laughing now. Or are they?
All I'm going to say is, if Luke Shaw, you know, continues in this Maldini mould, centre-back, Solly March at left. It's there. It's all there.
Ooh, well,
it's all there.
Bit too attacking.
But so I think one of the interesting things about, I suppose, March in particular in this game is the runs he was making, really. Yeah. And it shows that, you know, Potter did a good job at Brighton without question.
Yes. And he shouldn't be forgotten, actually, because he set the template and set them up.
And I think the great thing that De Zerbi is doing now when you watch them is, he hasn't tinkered with any of that. He's like, right, how can we make it better? Why don't we make it a bit more incisive?
Yeah.
And so when you've got your right wing back, you know, making runs across the field, you know, diagonals across the field, you're like, right, this is fascinating.
Yeah.
The way he's got them moving seems that little bit different. There was a stage when I rewatched that Liverpool game where, and Klopp alluded to it at the end of the game, it's the first time in a while that I've seen Liverpool a bit scared.
Yeah.
They
seem to think, fucking, they're just coming at us from all directions.
Matoma had the keys to that side of the pitch.
How good is he, by the way?
So good to watch.
But you are right, though, Pete. And I think that what Brighton do is they're having a great season. No two ways about that. De Zerbi obviously knows his onions. And when Liverpool turn up, they're all at sea. I mean, De Zerbi himself said he was surprised at how Klopp set up tactically.
Well, again, it's the lack of intensity, isn't it? It's like we were saying about Spurs.
But it's not just it's the tactical as well, Jim, because he looked at it and was like, why have they lined up like that? They smelt blood. And it shows you that the confidence and the intelligence of those Brighton players to spot that and go, right, okay, we've got our plan, but there are more weaknesses here. There are more openings here. Well, we'll bloody exploit that then as well. And they were phenomenal. And this is, of course, without Leandro Trossard, who was dropped for disciplinary reasons. And De Zerbi seems to have conducted himself in quite a decent way. And he said, you know, Trossard's a good guy. You know, he's a good player. You know, we'd have him back, all that kind of stuff. But it looks like it's getting to the point of no return. I mean, Trossard's agent has since released a statement saying he wishes to leave the club after being humiliated by the Brighton boss. Now, perhaps more will come out and we'll discuss it. But, you know, just judging on the performances and results, that certainly didn't seem to affect Brighton that day.
No, absolutely not. And it's be interesting to see what happens there. It looks like Trossard spotted an opportunity to maybe get a move now for some big money because he's in good form. He's what, 28? So it's an opportunity there. But yeah, I mean, that's impressive, isn't it? To lose one of your really your best players and your most experienced operators that the team is you know has been heavily relied on at times in the past is brilliant. And it's De Zerbi. It looks like he's been there for years.
Yeah, you know
I mean, it looks like he's built this team in his image and that they are fully bought into his philosophy, which clearly they are. But the fact he's got them playing like this so quickly, he's clearly taken what he liked of Potter's game, kept it and finessed it, really. It's so impressive.
What a handover, though. And again, people go on about how well Brighton are run. This is huge evidence to suggest that that's the case.
Well, I mean, the handover is a perfect way to describe it. Bear in mind, like, they deserve credit for the way they're able to, you know, just find players and bring them in and play the same way. To do that with managers is something else.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of a lot of time and effort that clubs with greater resources, and one of those resources being time, that some clubs don't do and seem incapable of doing. It's remarkable, really. But on Liverpool, it's funny you say, like, you know, that they were surprised the way that they set up. When you look at that 11 that they put out on paper, it's an 11 we would predict, really.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, like, having...
I think it's how it was deployed, but yeah, I take your point.
But in terms of, like, well, speaking to some Liverpool supporting fans over the weekend, the conversation that they've been having for a month in the pub has basically been, like, Salah's contract, getting rid of Mane.
Well, Mane going.
But that was letting Mane go.
It was very clever from Mane, though.
But the real sense of, like, should they, you know, have they been making the wrong moves? Also, little things that seem inconsequential at the time because of the way that Liverpool was spending. But think of someone like Minamino, someone like Naby Keita. Those players, they envisaged them being ready for to use your word, a handover of sorts from that midfield at this point in time, and it just hasn't worked out.
No, and I mean they've got injuries to key players, of course. I mean,
a lot of injuries.
You know,
as well.
Diaz was a great signer because he galvanised, he drives them forward really, really important. I actually think Nunez has been that as well. I know his finishing might not be up to scratch, but I think he's been, you know, agent of chaos and all that kind of stuff people call him. But he gets you going.
Yeah.
There's stuff happening, and it needs to be a little bit more finesse, but it's there. Jota's injured.
I was going
to
say that. I think that's been forgotten about a little bit from. Perhaps from the outside, I'm sure
Van Dijk.
He hit the ground running for them and was such a brilliant option.
But I think this is all actually. I think we can talk about the injuries, but again, you look at that starting 11. It's not even papering over the cracks. You saw Klopp after the game. You heard his comments. I think, you know, what I was talking about Conte earlier was, is he kind of losing his grip on things and so on. It surely is the same for Klopp. I think come the summer, I think there might have to be difficult conversations. I don't know. I don't think he'll ever get sacked from what he's done, unless, you know, 2-3 years we're still there. excuse me. People have mentioned that whole 7-year thing with Klopp. You know, the type of football they play is incredibly, intense. You know, heavy metal football, all that kind of stuff. They were 2 games away from one of, if not the greatest season of all time. Last season, you could say
so much longer ago,
but doesn't it just? But that is the case. You know, it went down to the last day of the Premier League season, Champions League final. It was still a successful season, of course. They won 2 trophies for crying out loud, and getting to a final in the Champions League is no mean feat. You have all that. You have a team that have been playing this type of football for so long. It's not the same as it is at Manchester City. Manchester City have got more money, so, you know, but Liverpool have spent, but City have got more money. But the type of football Guardiola plays, I know he's a very intense character as well, but it's not what it is at Liverpool. And we know Liverpool have been busting all of their guts to keep up with City. In another era, if you didn't have Man City playing this type of football, maybe it wouldn't be so... Liverpool wouldn't look so exhausted, but I just wonder if they can turn it round with Klopp at the helm.
You'd probably say that both Man City strikers and Liverpool strikers are starved of service as well, though, wouldn't you? Like the way that they played.
Trent's trying his best in terms of attacking football.
They look really isolated.
But they did. I mean, they didn't even score, for crying out loud. But I just think with what is going on with Klopp, you can also see him trying to do things tactically different. Now, the case, obviously, with this game, but we've also seen it as well. The way he's been deploying Thiago Alcantara, the way that he's trying to draft in a few more players, you know, is Gakpo the man that they need? He's obviously a talented player, but is it kind of, well, we'll get him just because we can? I think with Klopp...
Like Chelsea-ish, wasn't it?
But a little bit, you could argue. But I think, again, with that intensity of the football, Klopp is thinking, yeah, we can't do this right. I'll have a rethink. And it's kind of like, but that's your trick, mate. Mm. And it's a phenomenal trick. You've provided us with one of the best teams in recent years who have achieved phenomenal things. To try and teach... this, well, not an old dog, but do you know what I mean? New tricks.
The people have spoken a lot about how maybe the dog is aging a little bit.
Well,
perhaps Van Dijk and Matip aren't what they were, and Fabinho and Henderson in midfield as well. Obviously, James Milner's about 45. Like there are areas of the team that have perhaps aged out of their peaks. And I think the question is that teams inevitably have to have a transitional period after a cycle that's been really, really successful.
Ferguson was so good at that.
He was. And, I mean, it's not unreasonable for Jurgen Klopp to maybe have a season like this. But all the best managers have to deal with it. So is it the case that it's better to let Klopp sort of, you know, regenerate mm-hmm. what he wants Liverpool to be and what we know Liverpool can be? Or do they kind of have those difficult conversations and think about someone else? I mean, I don't know if there is someone better than Klopp that can come in.
Yeah. Well, and that's a fair point. And I think that... that's, you know, Klopp will still be there. If he wants to still be there, he will, even if they finish like seventh or something. So next season, it will be interesting. But if he can't pick it up, you know, it will soon be quite clear to see. I mean, I don't even think... I think they need a whole overhaul of the squad because, again, Klopp needs to go back to what he does. And I don't think he can suddenly start playing a different type of football and so on. What he does, what he's brought to football has been phenomenal. He's been one of the best coaches in modern years. And what he's done at Liverpool, as I stress, has been so, so impressive. But I think it would be kind of maybe even gutting that midfield quite largely, or certainly bringing big players. I mean, quite interesting that a Spanish newspaper has claimed that Liverpool are planning to offer either a coaching or a scouting role to Jude Bellingham's father to convince, obviously, him to... Who are you scouting now? Well, it's one of my sons, actually.
Well, they are apparently also weighing up an offer for his brother, Job Bellingham.
Yeah, get them all in.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the sort of stuff you have to do when you're competing with, like,
Man
States.
City.
Like,
yeah.
Fair enough. Like, why not?
Yeah.
Totally. Have you got a dog you want to bring in?
We can get you a dog. You want to we can get you a dog?
Exactly, yeah. My goodness, so, yeah.
Chelsea are offering more of a bigger dog up front.
Yeah, and they're actually offering a whole pack.
Yeah. Oh, indeed, yeah. Oh, but those...
Even Bellingham's not quite the right kind of player. Like, they need a fabulous... I mean, obviously, he'll be brilliant for them.
I know what you mean.
I think Lars mentioned it earlier. Like, they need a Fabinho type, basically.
Yeah, indeed they do. Indeed they do. Chaps, let's go all the way down to the bottom of the Premier League. Everton 1, Southampton 2. Now just one win in their last 13 games in all competitions for Frank Lampard and Everton. I mean, it's a phenomenal, fantastic, fabulous win for Southampton, Jim, but that is such a damning defeat for Everton. It really is. Because they'll look at the fixture list before this game and think, right, we're in the mire here. We need something. Ah, Southampton at home. Yeah. And Southampton obviously just were put through their paces by Man City. Great win for them. And Everton had more time to prepare. They were more refreshed, you would say. And it's Southampton to go away with a point.
Yeah, I mean, Everton just look like a depressed institution at the moment. And it's quite an unusual thing to see, like an entity be so just roundly in the doldrums. There's so little kind of positivity there. And they just look a bit rudderless. Frank Lampard looks lost. In the post-match interviews, he looks completely beleaguered. Obviously, this was a particularly difficult one for reasons we'll come on to. But
well, you say that they're rudderless and it's depressing. It's way worse than that. It's toxic in the highest possible degree, you could argue. Well, maybe not the highest possible degree, it can get worse. But you know, I mean, Lampard himself says, I know I'm not a miracle worker or the best coach in the world, but I know I can work as hard as I can. That is, you know, you see where his head is at and you know, I personally feel sorry for the guy.
Same.
But then you see the protest after the game. And actually, they're not even targeting Lampard, which is normally the case, isn't it? They're targeting the board. This is an endemic thing at the club, which has been going on for so long, with so much money spent, with nothing to show for their efforts.
Yeah, clearly, I think the board's approach just does not work in the modern game, does it? And it's telling that Everton fans for a long time.
It's piss poor,
the board they've been protesting against for a long, long time. It is
But awful. What do you do? This is the thing with Everton. We said, you know, a couple of months into the season, oh, it's another write-off season.
Yeah. West Ham Everton job swap. West Ham manager job swap.
Yeah,
I'm sure
West Ham will happily
Lampard
bring
to West Ham, Moyes to Everton.
I'd watch that.
Yeah.
Channel 4.
Absolutely.
Nice. Yeah.
Late night.
Yeah. Of just a Freaky Friday, suddenly Lampard is inside David Moyes.
No one.
Don't
careful.
Put it like that.
But I think
would anyone notice if they swap personalities?
It's a good point, actually. They are both quite dour at this point, aren't they?
Yeah, Moyes seems a bit more short of himself. I think West Ham fans might have something to say about that. But there we are.
Which squad would you rather have?
West Ham's easily.
Yeah, I'd have West Ham. I mean,
someone made. I know we're kind of veering here, but someone made a really good point about West Ham. I can't remember who. About like how they're in this situation, and yet they scored a goal earlier this season where Declan Rice, one of the most sought-after English midfielders, passed it to Brazil's number 10, who crossed the ball for Italy's number 9. Yeah. I mean, so that shows
if you can't get that right.
They're far better equipped to get themselves out of this situation, absolutely. Mm. But with Everton, though, they're terrified of relegation, aren't they? The fans are terrified of relegation because they can see that that will be a disaster and they could disappear for a long time out of the Premier League.
Well,
and
there's so many other examples of clubs where that's happened.
But the awkward thing for Everton is the fact that in trying to avoid being in this situation for the last few years, they've made themselves more susceptible to catastrophe if they do go down. Do you know what I mean? Because of the money they've spent, because of the way their squad is at the moment. And I don't know how a football club can do this, but it seems like legitimately the only way they get out of this rut, this endless loop of misery is a reset. But what does a reset look like?
Well, they do it every season, don't they? That's how it kind of feels. I suppose you promote young players, you accept the fact that results are going to be difficult, but it's you can't really do that when the stakes are this high, when they're that precarious. You have to do everything you can to stay up. So taking risks like that suddenly isn't really an option for you.
Yeah.
I mean, they've just been in this crappy position for so long, and there are plenty of Everton fans who will remember them winning trophies, you know, challenging and all that kind of stuff in the 80s. I know it's a long time ago, but there will be enough people in that stadium who have a memory of that.
But I don't think that matters at this point in time. In terms of, like, you can't look at that club now, especially if you're a supporter of that club, and think anything is going any light.
But let me finish my point. So, you know, they have a very impressive history. One of the founding teams of the flipping league, you know, all this kind of stuff. You know, this is a club rich in history who are part of a fantastic footballing city whose local rivals, they've seen them time and again win the European Cup or win the Champions League, all this kind of stuff. You know, they just think, when are we going to have a season where we get to the end of the season, no matter what it is? And I know they're not under it. I'm not saying they should be going for the title, and they're not saying that. But when you get to the end of the season, you kind of go, that was a good season, that.
Yeah.
When?
Yeah.
Brighton fans will go, oh, man, that was a great season. Fulham fans, hopefully, will say at the end of this season, yeah, that was a good season. All those, you can see you're enjoying the football.
Yeah.
When are they going to have that?
Well, their ceiling seems to be eighth, doesn't it? Which is the most frustrating.
Yeah.
Oh, they would now, but like even in the supposed good times. And that is such a frustrating ceiling to not be able to break into those European places. I know they'd kill for that now.
But, I mean, it's so toxic, though,
getting out of hand there, isn't
it? You hear what's all this stuff with regards to the board, you know, they're the real threat to safety and security. That's horrible. You see them stopping the players in the cars. It's horrible. That shouldn't be happening, and that's not going to help. Compare that to last season, even when, you know, towards the end of the season, the team were getting the coach to the ground, and the fans were there cheering them on and all that kind of stuff, which would have helped them propel them over the line. The way they celebrated staying up, you know, Lampard and punching the air and so on, because there probably was a feeling of, oh, thank goodness we've done that. Right, now we kick on, and this is worse than it was last season. It's unbelievably bad.
Carl Picknell, who is an Everton fan and a sports writer, he wrote a piece about what it is like to be an Everton fan, and he likened it to running for a bus in the rain, having it drive off just as you get to the door, and watching helplessly as a small boy gives you the finger through the window. It's a constant, relentless woe of everyday life encapsulated with the to and fro of a football team. I think generally, it's got to a place where it's worse than that.
Yeah. Well, and again, the fact that they share a city with a team who, okay, this season they're not doing very well. But again, they won two trophies last season, and some people think they had a disappointing season last season. But Southampton themselves, you know, when you've got a player like James Ward-Prowse who can produce moments like that, you've got a chance.
Yeah. I mean, and actually, him playing a bit further forward is paying dividends for them. It's just fantastic performance. And he really, really led. And that's what they need at this point.
Well, he's stepping up, you know, and when he gets a free kick now, I mean, I know people scored Anthony Gordon for giving that one away, and so they should. But at Fulham the other week when Southampton came, you know, he scored a great free kick. When they got given a free kick, I went, oh, no.
Yeah.
I was like, it's almost like a penalty.
You can't give him too many, can you?
And what is he, two free kick goals away from Beckham's record?
Yeah, it's not far off that, is it?
Just incredible.
And there's Mislav Orsic to come as well, who looks like a smart signing for Southampton. And you know, Nathan Jones's tactics are starting to clearly work. Because he's had a lot of criticism.
An enormous amount of criticism. We talk about situations, you know, they're chanting for him out after a few games at Southampton. You know, so it's not all been roses there. But, I mean, a cup win against Man City and then a win against the team who are above you in the league. Southampton are still bottom. That's the kind of thing that's going to help galvanise you.
Yeah, I was just on the Ward-Prowse, well, just I suppose on his new positioning as well. Like, you know, credit to a new manager coming in, especially someone who's under pressure and thinking the guy who's been the focal point of everything through midfield, getting further forward.
Yeah,
I think maybe people underestimate his Ward-Prowse's technical ability on the ball, because obviously very good from set pieces, quite an underrated shithouse as well.
Yep.
Loves a tackle, but getting him further forward. Mm. I know he didn't quite get the touch right for the first goal, but the effort to do it is why it came off, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the other thing to say for the free kick, I thought Pickford was abominable for that until I rewatched on the replay. Mykolenko feigns to go back on the line,
mm-hmm.
and then is somehow like gets his timings completely off.
Mm-hmm.
So he was supposed to have that side covered anyway, and then
I thought
didn't quite work
might
out.
Have done a bit better. And then I saw it from another angle, and I thought, actually, yeah, I was just proper whip and pace.
But Mykolenko runs to go back on the line and then stops halfway.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, so yeah, good win for Southampton, but I mean, it's all to do down there. I mean, because, like, you know, obviously West Ham are in there, and West Ham, they are the side where you say, well, they're too good to go down.
Mm.
But they are kind of sleepwalking the way. I mean, Moyes, again, looked very comfortable in the post-match. These things happen, we'll be okay, or whatever words to that effect. But they're down there. Because, I mean, you know, Bournemouth have lost 5 of their last 6 and are still a point above West Ham. That's how bad it is. You know, obviously Wolves beating West Ham, they go up there as well. So you do worry for West Ham, because you can't rely on that, oh, well, we'll be okay.
Mm.
And especially when Nottingham Forest have suddenly found a little bit of something in the tank. You know, you saw the way they celebrate those goals.
Oh,
Brennan Johnson took his goals superbly well. Gibbs White suddenly remembered that he's actually a really handy player.
They're a feel-good coming-of-age movie. Like, they've all got to know each other, and now they are thriving, and it's just beautiful.
It's a little bit like multi-million pound Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to stay up, Peter?
Yes, I think they will.
Okay,
I think they've got enough in the tank, personally.
Well, they seem to be hitting a little bit of form at the right time. You know, again, a cup run will do that for you.
Mm.
So
but who would go down though? It'd be funny if it was. Well, I mean, it'd be very funny if it was Everton, West Ham, Southampton.
Why would that be funny? Talk to the supporters of those clubs.
Because they're just always there, aren't they?
Are they?
In the top.
West Ham nearly got to European final last season.
They did, yeah.
Well, so they're not always there.
Also, West Ham
are in the league.
They're always in the league. They're always in the top league.
Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, so you want a kind of
refresh.
You want really some sort of new blood coming in.
I want to see Everton fans going to a poor championship side with their new stadium.
Mm-hmm.
With the air of a man who's turned up on the dance floor with a brand new shirt, going, why aren't the ladies talking to me? We've got a new stadium.
Yeah.
Why aren't we winning matches?
I've got loads of money.
Got loads of money.
Look at the state here.
Actually, it's a good point. One of the, a lot of like media at the moment in terms of TV shows and movies are just remakes, aren't they, with new casts.
Yes.
Maybe that's what the Premier League needs.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I like your thinking.
Bring in one of the little ones from Stranger Things.
It does look like Burnley will go up, though. Would you like to see Burnley back?
It's all a bit...
Yeah,
it's all a bit underwhelming.
Is that the remake you don't want to see?
I don't want them back.
Company and Bellamy, though, in charge? That's a little bit of something.
That's a little bit like whatever Nicholas Lyndhurst is about to do.
Yeah.
Why is he still around?
He's back in Fraser, isn't he?
That's
a surprise.
He's not playing Fraser, though. Right?
No, I think he is, isn't he?
Really?
Yeah. Is that the point?
Oh, my God.
No, he's playing... I don't know
he's playing Daphne. Look,
he's playing Daphne.
There you go. That makes sense.
Playing that little dog who gets on the old man's chair.
Oh, dear. Look, we're not going to end the show with blasts from the past and old characters coming back to try and refresh. But you did mention the Championship.
Yeah.
And Cardiff City, of course, are down there. They're 21st and they're 3 points from safety. And there are reports that Cardiff are exploring bringing Neil Warnock out of retirement.
Amazing.
It's like
they heard Mason's interview with him. Oh, he's still around.
Another podcast guy cut down in its prime. just as it was starting to get going. Oh, what a shame.
Yeah.
Content creator.
It's amazing. The way it was reported was Cardiff are actively exploring bringing Neil Warnock out of retirement. And as a rabble listener, Kieran, replied to one of our tweets about this, I love how this headline is worded, like Cardiff own him. It's like he's in a cryogenics box in the back. We're in the shit. Fuck it, get Neil Warnock out!
Break glass. In case of emergency, break glass for Warnock.
In case of emergency, break glass.
Well, I was enjoying my retirement.
6 out of 10.
I've put my jumper on. So I feel a benefit when I'm in the cryo chamber.
Lovely old job. We want to see it, don't we?
We always want to see it.
They'll be promoted within months. There we are, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm better off out of stasis, if I'm honest.
It's been a pleasure.
You don't
having
want to
you
warm up too quickly in case of shrinkage.
Thank you very much, Jim Campbell.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Pete Dolson.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you, Vitush and Entourage.
Toss salads and scrambled eggs.
Thank you, Neil Warnock. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.